Chapter 2. There was a man floating outside my window. But that couldn't be. Men didn't float. He must be standing on the roof. But I was only deluding myself, because I could clearly see his feet in the moonlight, and they were resting on nothing but empty air. I couldn't see the man's face, but I could nearly feel his intent, and it wasn't something I would want to agree to. The window frame was shaking so hard, it would soon fly out. I needed to get out, rather than ponder the science fiction mascot's intentions. I need to get out now. Rushing down the stairs, I heard a resounding crash behind me. That meant the window had given out faster than expected. Move faster, move faster. I ran to the kitchen for my car keys, but when I turned to the front door, the man was hovering there, waiting. He was between me and the door, so that there was no chance that I would get past him, out the door, into my car. The back door was the only option left, unless I wanted to meet the threat head-on, which coincidentally, I had no desire to do. Seeing my cell, I grabbed it along the way. The 911 operator answered as my fingers closed around the knob. 911, what's your emergency? There's a man in my house. He's getting closer. Turning the handle with quivering fingers, I slammed out to the backyard. He was getting closer, but at a slow, steady pace, as if he knew I had no chance to escape. Just watch me. Ma'am, please remain calm. State your address and I will send a unit in response. Are you telling me they aren't already on their way? Aren't you tracking this call? The man is floating closer every second. By the time you get here, I'll be dead. Ma'am, did you say floating? Have you taken any drugs tonight? I threw down the phone in frustration. There was no help forthcoming from that corner. How hard was it to believe that a floating person had broken into my home from a second-story window? Right. Maybe it was a dream. He was floating. Still, do I really want to take the chance? What now? The backyard was fenced in, which left me few options. The gate seemed the most obvious choice, but it was already squeaking in complaint as it opened to reveal a new threat. Another man was now running towards me as the first glided through the back door I had just run from. Now I was fenced in with boundaries on all sides and threatening men blocking both gates. There was nowhere to go. To make things worse, the second man's countenance had transformed to a scary grin, almost a leer. Well, what do you want? I continued to back up, though I knew there was no escape here. There was no response to my question. They just continued to stalk towards me, as if my fear gave them some kind of sadistic enjoyment. The second man stepped forward until he was within the moon's illuminating reach. I could only gasp in horror at the visage exposed. He looked like an animal. Turning back to the first man, I debated without hope. Which would be easier to get by? I took another glance at the one who had started it all. He had the look of cold brutality and old-world elegance. He looked to be wearing a frosted costume. His hair was blowing in a wind, but there was no breeze. His face was unforgiving in its intensity. But the savage? He was scary evil. His hair was long and untamed, and his eyes shone with a maniacal gleam. He even appeared to have claws. Neither seemed like the kind to let me go. My choices seemed to be to either suffer being mauled to death by the savage one, or chopped into little pieces while my tormentor smiled. There has to be another way. Please let there be another way. I eyed the opposite line of fencing and tried to determine if I could possibly scale it. No, probably not, but I had no choice. I ran to the promise of freedom, screaming all the way. Then, when I was close enough to touch the fence and salvation seemed within my grasp, someone vaulted over the side to stand in front of me. How many henchmen do they have? I screamed well, then promptly died. It hadn't done me any good so far, and my throat had started a protest of its own. He stalked towards me, but then, in a surprise move, leapt in front to face the savage one. I had rescuers. Maybe now I might live through the night. Two more men cleared the fence to join my protector. One positioned himself in the shadows to the side, while one stayed behind. My protector had begun backing up, pushing me further back with each step he took. Give it up. You can't have her, he told the cold one. Ah, but I will. Do you even know what she is? It doesn't matter. It mattered to me. What exactly was I? Part of me felt like saying, hey, I'm right here. Or do I look deaf to you? Be the other part, the same part, said to keep quiet, and let them fight it out. They continued their standoff, and I wondered what the holdup was. I wanted some action. Couldn't they just kill my attackers and get it over with so I could end this nightmare? I vaguely heard what sounded like a helicopter in the distance. The measured disturbance of the blades was getting louder as each second passed. My protector tensed in front of me and tapped his leg with his finger in some sort of signal. Then all hell broke loose. The shadowed man tackled the cold one, and the man from behind took on the savage. My protector turned and pulled me up into his arms. I felt his whole body tense alongside mine, and then he launched us over the fence. Finally, it was beginning to look like I would survive the night. As soon as we landed, he dropped me and grabbed my hand, silently urging me to run. I followed as closely behind him as I could. I eventually realized we were moving in the opposite direction of the whirr of the helicopter. "Where are we going, aren't we?" He stopped and turned and clamped his hand over my mouth. He shook his head and motioned to continue running. I nodded as if I agreed, but in reality, I was for the first time questioning my decision to follow this man. I knew nothing about him. The moon had disappeared behind some clouds, and I no longer knew where we were. I was relying on someone I didn't know to save my life. He wasn't wearing a uniform and had made no assurances he was someone I could trust. But what were my options? Surely this man was a better choice than the cold and savage duo I had barely escaped. For now, the circumstances dictated my decision. And the worst part of it all was that I still hadn't been to the bathroom. Finally, after what felt like hours of running, but was probably more along the lines of 30 minutes, we came to a little gas station. The lights were a welcome sight in the darkness of the night. I wearily trudged to the bathroom inside, and was relieved when my now suspect protector didn't ask any questions. When I exited, I saw he was throwing bags of chips and mini cereal boxes into two baskets already filled with drinks. Oh no, I think he snapped. But I had to thank him. I owed him that much, and my annoyingly dominant sense of honor demanded it. I walked closer to his broad back and prepared a mini speech of thanks. "I wanted to thank you, but I realized I don't even know your name." He didn't even look up from his mad scramble to transfer the entire store's contents to the two plastic baskets. "Logan." Did he just grunt? I hadn't realized people really did that, and I'd certainly never heard anyone make the sound. Strange. "So, Logan, did you call the police? Are they on their way? What about your teammates? Are they meeting you here?" He ignored my questions and brought the baskets to the cashier. I heard him say, "Ring this up." And then he was walking back to the aisles with two more baskets in hand. He handed one to me as he began filling the other with medical supplies. I watched as ace bandages, band-aids, burn cream, and then a travel-sized sewing kit flew into the basket. "Okay, I don't even want to know." I was stupefied. As if sensing my stare, he turned to me and scowled at my basket. "Fill that up." "With what?" "Sure, crazy man. Let's just spend hundreds of dollars at some gas station." His look had changed from anger to disbelief and impatience. "With food. What do you like?" He continued without giving me a chance to respond. "Never mind. Orange juice for vitamin C, water, some protein bars for energy." He was reciting the information as if it was part of a lesson I should remember. With the adrenaline racing through my system and my confusion growing by the second, there was a fat chance of that. As he named each item, he threw it into my basket until my arms could barely hold it up. He then grabbed hold of my arm to drag me to the candy aisle.
"Sugar is good for a quick energy boost, but too much is inadvisable because of the resulting crash."
Three Musketeers, Snickers, and Milky Ways were added to my already overfilled basket. "I don't understand. Have you called the cops or not? Don't I need to fill out a statement or something?" He finally stopped his scrambling and looked me straight in the face. "No."
"No, I don't need to fill out a statement?"
"No, I didn't call the police, nor do I plan on it. Time is of the essence. My team can only stall for so long. We need to get our supplies, get in the van, and get out of here."
"What? Your team is just stalling? I'm not going anywhere with—"
His arm dropped from mine to cover my mouth. "Keep it down. I don't want to have to hurt the clerk. Just follow my lead, and everyone will come out of this intact." I could feel my eyes widening. He really is crazy. What do I do now? This can't get any worse. The amount of supplies he was collecting implied that he planned on being secluded for a while, and the medical supplies implied I didn't want to know what they implied. Best try to appear compliant. I nodded my head and resisted the impulse to bite his restraining hand.
That's not good enough. I need to know that you will do everything as soon as I say it. I want your promise, or the clerk will meet with some unfortunate circumstances trying to protect you.
He knows what I'm thinking. At least that's what it seemed like.
What now?
Now you promise. The more time you squander, the worse chance the clerk has of making it through the night. I don't want a scene, but I will deal with it with whatever means necessary. He really did know what I was thinking. My first instinct was for myself. Forget the clerk. But was I really that callous and selfish? Yes, I'm too young to die. I fidgeted in indecision until the bell above the entrance door rang, and little girl voices begging for candy lightened the air. I couldn't be the cause of the death of a child.
I promise.
He proved the validity of my suspicions about mind reading when he nodded and moved his hand. He grabbed my arm and led me to the front counter to hand the other two baskets to the clerk. I thought about trying to signal the guy with my eyes or something, but the hand on my arm tightened, and I knew it wasn't a good idea. I heard the children getting closer with their parents and wished I could just scream at them to run. One of the girls bumped into my leg in her excitement at her candy. I looked behind and caught the girl in mid-giggle. She looked to be only 4 or 5. She smiled and chirped, "I'm sorry," in a sweetly innocent voice.
"I am too."
The hand on my wrist tightened further. "Okay, cut it out. I'm losing circulation." A startling response bounced into my head. "Stop considering other options and we won't have a problem." Oddly violated, I felt the beginnings of a headache. It was like my brain was too full, like some uninvited presence had determinedly forced my barriers down until my defenses lay in scattered ruins.
"What did you do to me?"
I established a link. I was serious about the circulation thing. His hand loosened infinitesimally. At last, the clerk finished ringing up the purchase. Logan took out an impressive wad of cash and counted out the bills. Cash. Not a good sign, because that meant we weren't leaving a trail. He handed me one of the baskets and grabbed the other 3, then led the way to the parking lot. "Please don't be a dingy white van. Please don't be a dingy white van." Everyone knew the people who were kidnapped never to be seen again were taken away in a dingy white van with tinted windows. Relief coursed through when Logan moved towards a red truck. Red trucks were good. Red trucks were shiny. How many people kidnapped someone in a bright, shiny, recently cleaned red truck? But we kept moving and moving until we were past the truck. Relief died a swift death when he walked past a perfectly reasonable electric green convertible to the vehicle on the other side. I could only sigh in resignation. What do you know? A dingy white van. The night had reached an all-time low, but there was still hope as long as I didn't get in a vehicle with Logan, the savior-turned-maniac. Once in the vehicle, my survival odds would drop dramatically. 48 hours had taught me that. Now was the time to act. Logan was busy loading up the van. The white van? I still can't believe my luck on that one. He seemed secure in his belief that I would stay. It might have something to do with that freaky mind link business. The little girls were still inside the station, and the lot was empty, other than the preferable vehicles that I would rather be spirited away in. It's decision time. I dropped my basket and made a run for it. 2 seconds later, I heard a muffled curse and the sound of the van door slamming. He was reacting too quickly. I needed more time. I pumped my legs harder and faster over the wet grass. I was at a disadvantage. He seemed to be enhanced in some way, and I didn't know where I was. It took me 15 minutes to walk a mile. He had been able to launch our combined body weight over a fence at least 6 feet high. I put on another burst of speed. How much longer before I have to take a breath? It didn't help my confidence level when each of his footfalls seemed to jar the very earth beneath my feet. Yet they made no sound. Eerie. I kept flinching in the anticipation of being taken down. It didn't matter, because next thing I knew, I experienced a tackle that an NFL linebacker would be proud of. It hit the ground hard, and you feel his breath next to my ear. It was disappointing that it didn't even seem winded. Struggling against his rock-solid chest did no good. He didn't budge. That might be a result of him outweighing me by 100 pounds of solid muscle. When you wake up with a headache, I want you to remember you chose this route. He really is crazy. Headache? Wake up? There was jostling movement from him, and then I felt a swift prick through my thin pajamas into my thigh. His body was an immovable weight, and I suddenly couldn't call upon the energy required to fight. It would just be so easy just to let go. My last thought before I drifted away was that the ground sure was cold.